All right, so I'm going to talk briefly, hopefully, about current singularities of a particular kind, in particular current singularities which I will refer to as O1, D invariant. Okay, and holographic duals. So this is a subject which was initiated and contributed largely by people sitting in this room. What I'm going to do is to distill a few ideas from a couple of papers I wrote with Eliezer Rabinovici, okay, so the idea is that we want to look at the type of crunches which have this symmetry. This is the symmetry of a hyperboloid in dimensions. So the thing that is crunching is a hyperboloid in dimensions, which means that we are looking at Freeman, Robertson, Walker with negative curvature. In fact, we are not looking at the more general such thing, but crunching cosmologies which have the property that they can give in, they can be given initial conditions on a null surface which are almost ADS. So the idea is that you have some crunching after W, which you can give initial conditions on a null surface, this null, where in the vicinity of this point is almost ADS. In a way, in such a way that this thing starts as you foliate it by OD, one invariant slices, which means hyperbolic slices. Each of these things is hyperbolic. It starts expanding, and then goes down and crunches. Now, the reason why you restrict to this thing is because a null hypersurface of this kind, where everything is smooth, the metric is locally flat, any matter fields are smooth in an appropriate way around here, can be obtained by analytic continuation from a from the origin of Fallot space. Okay. So the idea is that you have, say, a geometry which is a ball in D plus one dimensions, and if you foliate it by spheres, SD, and you assume that this geometry has O E plus one dimensional symmetry, which means that whatever is happening is just happening radially as far as the metric and the matter fields.
Why don't you sit down there and then we'll find out
what
there's
then, if you just cut this metric over here, remove this upper part here, and do an appropriate analytic continuation in which OD plus 1 is transferred into OD, 1, which means that you continue the spheres into the sitter slices, hyperboloids. Then this thing goes like this, slices like that. And this thing here goes into a null cone, right? And as you continue the metric above this cone, respecting the global symmetry that you have, what you have is another slicing, which what you have are slices which still have this metric, this isometry, which are hyperboloids. So if your fields are smooth here in the Euclidean section, say you have a scalar field that has a value here, but its first derivative is zero, radially. It has only contribution in second derivative, so the scalar field profile looks smooth like this. Right? Then you can analytically, there is no conical problem in at the origin. Then you can analytically continue this into a smooth cosmology, which is expanding on hyperboloids, and then eventually goes down and crunches. Okay. Now, of course, that means that basically the answer to what is the holographic dual of this is easy to guess, or at least to guess one possible construction. The idea is that you have to define a state in your favorite conformal theory dual, if you want, which deep in the infrared looks like this. It looks like a very, very small deformation of ABS near the origin and has the symmetries of a d-dimensional sphere. Okay? So the dual is almost, I mean, the dual is very simple, actually. Okay? You need just a CFT ultraviolet fixed point. This is in order to have a theory that makes sense at all scales. Okay? So you have a, you can safely, you have a safe haven in the ultraviolet to map everything. You have a relevant perturbation of it with some mass in order to break conformal symmetry, so you have something which is not pure ABS. And you put the whole thing on a d-dimensional sphere. And this is a Euclidean thing. Okay? So I have an Euclidean RG flow, which is given by some relevant perturbation of an ultraviolet fixed point, and the whole thing has finite size effects. So conformal symmetry is broken in two ways. There are two sources of conformal symmetry breaking. One is explicit by the relevant perturbation, and the other one is spontaneous. It's because I'm putting everything in a sphere. Okay? Now, this theory is controlled by one. If I don't do anything more to it, I don't turn on more couplings and think about you know, hierarchies between scales and things like that. This theory is just controlled by this dimensional quantity. If this thing is much larger than one, if this thing is much smaller than one, that means that the conformal symmetry breaking is controlled by the finite size effect. So this theory actually looks all the way like the ultraviolet theory, slightly perturbed, very little, but the most important breakdown of conformal symmetry comes because of the box. So it's like putting quarks and gluons in a box, if you like, if you think of the QCD analogy. So this looks like the UV CFT on a box. In the opposite limit, then this theory looks like, this theory looks like whatever is the infrared fixed point that this theory flows to, put in a box. So it's like pions in a box in this case. Okay? So, and then therefore we have to find out, we have to specify what type of infrared fixed point this theory has. It may be trivial. For example, we may have a situation where this generates a mass gap. That's not good. We don't want that. Okay? Because if there is a mass gap, well, I will come back to that later, but let's say that there are two possibilities. Either the theory is gapped, or the theory has a non-trivial infrared fixed point, which I then put in the box. In fact, to play the game, I need not only to avoid the gap alternative, but I also need to avoid the fact that this infrared fixed point is small. I mean, I need this to have a lot of degrees of freedom in order to have a gravity dual. So I need a large n amount of large central charge for this infrared fixed point. And I also need it to be described by gravity. So I don't like a situation, for example, in which I got a sort of Horowitz-Polchinski transition to some weakly coupled description because some soft coupling is becoming small and the gravity dual is becoming strongly coupled, strongly curved. So what are the pictures that you get in the geometry? Well, for this case, you have a ball b b plus one, which is asymptotically ABS. So over here is almost ABS. This is the scale of the box, the scale of the radius of the box, the sphere. And then there is a little, you know, bump here, because there are some scalar fields that are growing a little bit. everything is very linear. Everything is very silly because the perturbation is much smaller than the box. So basically, everything works like the ADS metric foliated in a way which is OD plus one invariant plus a little perturbation that accumulates in the center. So this is very good. This is like the minimal building block to produce the crunch in a smooth way. And it's just a very innocuous looking thing from the point of view of the field theory.
Is your bulk theory just gravity plus scalar field?
Well, the box actually leaves... the bulk, well, I'm not specifying, actually. I'm not being so precise. It depends on how much you want to work or how precise a question you want to ask to your model. But, ideally, you would put here, say, n equal 4 super Yamils, therefore I can put here type 2D string theory, in principle, and then you can be very precise.
So how do you know there will be a crunch and there must be some involved?
Well, because generically, when I run the Einstein equations here, generically they crunch. So it could be that I can fine-tune the state so that it's precisely periodic under all these bounces of the Freeman-Robertson-Walker parametrization. Okay, for that I need the scalar field to sort of die peacefully on this surface here. I can fine-tune it perhaps, but it will require some fine-tuning.
So the SV, or really the sitter slices that you have, becomes zero size at the Kolmogorov bubble, basically. So when you describe what's inside of it, you're going beyond the infrared region. That's
well, let's say that.
Captured by.
Yeah, let me.
Which is probably fine, but that's why this is related to the going behind the horizon. Business.
Yeah, in fact, if you look at the system from here, it looks like a bubble. Okay, so and this looks like interior of a bubble. So, it's not. But let me answer that question when I draw a picture in 2 minutes. For now, these are Clearian pictures. This is just the Hartle-Hawking state, if you like, that I used to Hartle-Hawking the Hartle-Hawking path integral on here
would
give me the state.
Plus Kolmogorov-Mandelbrot, right? Or?
No, really, this is not Kolmogorov-Mandelbrot, but let's say that the information about whether this is a bubble or not is given by how the fields look here. In fact, this is not a bubble in any precise sense because it's too small. It's just much smaller than the scale of the box in which the theory is living. So, you could call it a bubble, but then you can call everything a bubble. I will draw for you a bubble now. Okay?
In particular, it doesn't involve tunneling.
Sorry?
In particular, it doesn't involve tunneling.
No, this doesn't involve tunneling.
Which is why
I didn't say these are Kolmogorov-Mandelbrot bubbles.
Yeah, exactly.
But they can still be bubbles.
Well,
but not Kolmogorov-Mandelbrot.
The symmetries of a bubble.
Yeah, your
right.
Picture over there is like a.
It's not tunneling in
a state. Just outside its state, which is.
Look at this case.
Really
now. Look at this case in this now. So in this case, you have the same story, except that now, much before the scale of the box, you get a feature at a radius of order m times r squared, according to the UVIR correspondence. So there will be some non-trivial profile of the fields here which differ from ADS. So the theory is ADS here, approximately, is ADS by assumption, again here, approximately, and something happens here, like a domain wall with a spherical geometry. Okay. So this is what happens when you put a theory which has a non-trivial domain wall structure in the energy domain. So as a non-trivial flow into a non-trivial infrared CFT, you put it on a Euclidean box. Okay? It will have this type of geometry in the gravitational pool. And this is, obviously, this looks like a well-defined bubble. Okay? Now, as you do the analytic continuation to Lorentzian geometries of these things, what you have is, if I draw it like this, I will draw it now radially. So this thing is this thing here. The spheres, SDs, are foliating like this. Suppose that I have this bubble-like thing here at some radius, just telling me that my fields are doing something. Then the analytic continuation takes the origin into the null surface. If this is asymptotically ADS, this goes into asymptotically ADS here, which is the Penrose diagram of asymptotically ADS like that. This, which is a spherically invariant in Euclidean space, becomes the Sitter invariant picture in real and Lorentzian signature. So I get something which is expanding like a bubble exponentially fast. Approaches the speed of light. And then it's obvious that if you sit here, it's a bubble. Okay? You're just watching a bubble grow inside the DS.
But your field theory is also on the Sitter space.
Yeah. Now, right? Yeah, it will be, yeah. In fact, I can put it in whatever I want, but there is a play here, so we'll see. And then here I get the Freeman-Robertson-Walker patch, in which I get just basically, since this interior is again becoming, as I go away from the wall of the bubble, it's becoming again ADS. Okay, I can just say that this is again ADS approximately by now in the Freeman-Robertson-Walker foliation. But then these scalar fields, when this space-time starts contracting again, they blue shift. Cosmological constant is not dominating the dynamics anymore because they are becoming big. They are accumulating energy, and then there is a crunch. Okay. So that's the kind of situation that I have. And then, let me see what they want to say. So, as I said, well, one comment. I could have replaced this thing, this part here, which is ADS asymptotic, by some other stuff, like a piece of lattice space or a piece of the Sitter space. I could do that if I want, but then I lose, if you like, the control over the game at all scales. And I have to work with some cutoff region in which I know that I have approximately ADS. And then I can define an effective theory with a cutoff at that scale, and I map everything to that. But that is not a completely precise description. Is it a little bit like if I decide to focus only on this piece of space-time? In this piece of space-time, I get, again, ADS, which means that there is a dual description in which I have a CFT perturbed with some irrelevant operators, which are just the effect of integrating out the data of the wall. But then again, this is a, and this is good enough, you see, because this region is a Cauchy, includes all the Cauchy development of the rest of the Freeman-Robertson-Walker. So this effective theory is enough actually to describe the crunch in itself. Okay, but from the point of view of the whole thing, it's just an approximate description because it's good only up to irrelevant operators that tell me that I have a cutoff in this description. So what else I wanted to say at this point? These are not Coleman Deluccia bubbles because I am assuming that this is just a, if you like, a ground state geometry for a relevant deformation. Okay.
Are you saying you want to make the whole thing Lorentzian? In which case it's fine.
Yeah, I use this Euclidean the. Description
you can just
of the,
forget about the bottom half to make it the time reversal.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Except then you have a.
I can do that.
Then you have a big bang.
I can do the big bang. Yeah.
But that's what you're thinking about.
Well, I'm just. I can just define an initial state here and work it out. So you know the Hartle-Hodgkin prescription is can be seen as specifying a given state at some time slice, and then you can choose to propagate this state to the future or to the past in a time-symmetric fashion if you want. It gives you also a mirror bank in the past. Okay.
So I guess, sorry to labor this, but I don't understand why you keep saying it's not a Coleman-Deluccia bubble. It's a bubble in which gravity back reaction has been included.
It's not because the bubble, these fields, change a coupling in the boundary theory because they generate an untrivial coupling here. Okay. A Coleman Delitzsch bubble doesn't do that. It's a completely normalizable solution, which, in fact, it also has moduli.
Does it look like? I mean, if I go away from the boundary, I don't worry about what the boundary conditions are in place.
What?
If I forget what's going on precisely at the boundary, so away from the boundary, I just have what you feel.
It does look like, yeah.
It
looks like Coleman Delitzsch.
I think the difference is Coleman Delitzsch is supposed to be for an unstable, if you're at an unstable, you know, vacuum,
Something. Sure.
And you're starting with a stable vacuum. And
a Coleman Delitzsch is an instanton of the field theory, and the instantons are completely normalizable deformations or states. I mean, are finite action solutions in the Euclidean theory. Okay, that means that by putting the instanton inside, you are not changing the couplings of the theory. It's a solution with fixed couplings. Okay, here by putting this thing here, I am inducing a mass in the CFT. So this is like the minimum action solution with that given mass. On top of this, if the theory is unstable in spite of the mass. Could be that there is instabilities in this theory in spite of having a mass. I could have Coleman Delitzsch bubbles on top of this one that would start popping out, for example, here. But whenever you have an instanton, you have a moduli space. You can put them anywhere. And therefore, the whole thing becomes much more difficult. You know, they are more difficult animals to deal with, actually. I want to avoid that. So I'm assuming the theory is completely stable. It doesn't have non-perturbative instabilities of any kind. So now, one thing which is very simple that you can say is that if you take seriously this idea that you are defining a state here, this state is obviously has obviously the symmetry that we have cooked for it, all in t comma 1 symmetry, which means that if you consider the theory, well, first of, before coming to this, let me look at the trivial case in which I engineer the vacuum. So I don't have any feature here. I don't have a scalar fields. Everything is in the vacuum. It's pure ADS, scalar fields equal zero, whatever. Okay? Then I get something which is obviously just pure ADS in all the ways, in all the possible ways you can look at it. In that case, this is just a Korni singularity, so I can continue it if I want. It still is a Freeman-Robertson worker looking background, but it's just doing nothing interesting. This still looks like a foliation in the Sitter slices. This is just the foliation of ADS, pure ADS in spheres. In fact, the state I define here is not only this state, let me call this state psi naught. This state is fully conformal invariant, not only the Sitter invariant. So this state has more symmetry than just this one, obviously, because this state is invariant under dilatations in this radius, and this is not. There is something here. Okay. Now, I can now choose to evolve this state with two different Hamiltonians. Or I can choose to measure it with two different operator algebras. One operator algebra is, by definition, what I call local quantum field theory in the Sitter space. Other operator algebra is local quantum field theory in Einstein. In fact, I can choose any possible, because this is a conformal field theory, I can choose any possible space which is conformally related to my favorite OD comma one symmetric manifold that I want, and map out an operator algebra just by the conformal transformation that I can use to parameter to measure this state. Okay, there's an algebra of observables. They are local, which means that their definition in the holographic dual refers to how you specify them near this boundary. Asking infrared questions can be difficult, but as a matter of principle, I can define these local algebras.
But it's a very big difference whether the time that you put there is a finite time in one coordinate and the other one, because it may be a coordinate transformation that is very singular. So I don't think it's So you may split up the other space in a very complicated way by doing this.
So in this specification, say, let me now, I need another picture. Let's see. I'm going to write it. Okay, so.
Going back to your first example, only 80, normal ADS time, the crunch comes at finite time. This is important. I mean, otherwise, it's from equals infinity.
Depends on the Hamiltonian you're
saying. I understand this, but then.
It comes at finite time and in this time slice.
If you put it on the sigma space, it would be infinite.
Right. Right. So, suppose I take this state that I imagine now defined in my CFT. So forget now about the bulk. You are given this conformally invariant state in this initial sphere. This is an SD minus one sphere. So I take all the fields in my CFT and write down psi of all the fields in my CFT. And this is a wave functional, and this wave functional is conformally invariant. It's the Bunch-Davis vacuum, if you like, right? In fact, it is conformally invariant, which means that I can see it as the Bunch-Davis vacuum if I choose to evolve it with the de Sitter Hamiltonian, but it will look like a different thing if I choose to evolve it with a different Hamiltonian. In fact, this same state states the vacuum if I choose to evolve it with the Hamiltonian of the Einstein manifold. So I have two options. De Sitter Hamiltonian and Einstein manifold, which is R cross SD minus 1, Einstein Hamiltonian. Both things are time-dependent Hamiltonians. In one case, the manifold where the fields are defined is growing. So it's a time-dependent Hamiltonian. In the other case, in this case, it's not time-dependent. I'm jumping ahead of myself. Sorry. This description is a time-dependent description. This description is a static description. But this particular state continues to be the vacuum for those Hamiltonians, for both of the two Hamiltonians, because these two Hamiltonians are related by a conformal transformation. And this state is conformally invariant. Okay? Now, this is a complementarity map for this particular state and for any state which is a small normalizable perturbation of this state, namely a bunch of particles on top of this state. I can put a bunch of particles here that are bumping around in ADS, just going up and down. And this bunch of particles can be evolved with the Einstein Hamiltonian. The evolution is completely smooth at all times. Or they can be evolved with the de Sitter Hamiltonian, and in that case, I only catch them in this region here. And they look like elephants that are being nucleated out of the de Sitter horizon, and for a while they stay, and then they go thermalize back into the de Sitter horizon.
It's not clear, is it, that the de Sitter description only describes things outside the de Sitter horizon? I mean, this is something which I guess we've discussed before.
Well,
I don't see why the foliation clearly sort of becomes null at the horizon. But isn't it, it seems possible that the
this point is the infinite time in the de Sitter, so. The Sitter just gives me that. It tells a story. You know, the operators that I call the Sitter operator algebra tell a story about this state, which extends up to tau equal infinity.
Sure, but tau equals infinity could still be covering a bulk space-time, which goes all the way up to your future. You know, that null surface, which becomes a singularity when you perturb it.
Yes, I know.
So
I know.
You could fill in that.
But way. But in order to get the bulk, I cannot get the bulk just by saying words about the local data in my CFT. I need to run the normalization group down. So if I specify the theory with the de Sitter operator algebra, let's call it A, de Sitter, and run the normalization group, say the holographic normalization group down, I generate a metric, which is just this patch of anti-de Sitter, because I am specifying that this normalization group be the Sitter invariant. So all the energy slices are the Sitter invariant. My cutoff is the Sitter invariant. I choose that. If I want to uncover things that happen over here, I need to choose a cutoff procedure which is not receiver invariant. The simplest way of doing that is to change variables altogether to the Einstein frame operator algebra, in which the natural cutoff does penetrate perfectly in this region. So if I use the Einstein frame operator algebra, then the slicing, the energy slicing of integrating out layers looks like this. And this, of course, doesn't care about having here a horizon or anything like that.
This is also analogous to going from Poincaré to global.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's no big deal. I mean, I'm not saying anything very profound or new here.
Are you considering that the Einstein, if you use the Einstein Hamiltonian, you know more about geometry than if you know?
Not really, because everything I can know is specified by the state here.
Right.
I'm just telling you that look at it in Heisenberg point of view. You have a state, the state doesn't move, and you have different operator algebras that depend on time.
There will be observables which will somehow look more natural than the Einstein.
Right. Yeah, so as far as information concerns, everything is specified here, and that's it. It's different for an eternal black hole, because in an eternal black hole, the exterior picture is only half of it, of the whole Cauchy surface. And then you have this, to work with this idea of that you have a pure state entangled, and the exterior picture is just fundamentally mixed. You can only work with a mixed state in that case. But for a collapsing black hole, it's just like this also. There is no issue of other Cauchy surface in the other universe or anything like that. Okay, now what happens is that, of course, the conformal transformation that takes me from these two pictures is singular. Okay, and that conformal transformation, I will put it here, is the conformal transformation which takes the sitter to Einstein. So this is just, you take the metric of the sitter. This is the sitter, and you write it as omega squared minus dt squared plus r squared this is Einstein, and then this thing is omega is 1 over cosine t or sines hyperbolic sine t over r hyperbolic sine tau over r. So this is singular at t equal t star equal pi r halves. But in this silly example here, it doesn't matter because my state is invariant anyway under the conformal transformation. So the evolution is not singular. Sorry. But things change if I consider a state which is only the sitter invariant, not fully conformal invariant, like this one. This state has a feature here, which is, if you look at it in Einstein frame, which means foliate in time like this, it looks like something which is really serious. You have this this immense bubble, which has some tension on it, which is just running to the boundary of the theory of finite time. So something could happen, yes.
If you put a few particles in ADS, right, you have a state which is not conformally invariant anymore. But we can still go from one frame to another without any problem.
Right.
So it's more than just the fact that states conform.
The point is that if you put a few particles in ADS, in order for the thing to be still well-defined and not producing a crunch, you need these particles. When you look at them in Einstein frame, they have to have finite energy. Which means that these particles can do things like what I wrote here, but they cannot do things like this. They can, if they have a rocket and you pull with a rocket at the speed of light to the boundary, that is an illegal thing to do in order to have a well-defined future in Einstein frame.
Okay.
That will be okay in the sitter frame. It will be just some, you know, mildly time-dependent but asymptotic to some equilibrium configuration in the sitter. But it will differ from the sitter Banks-Davis vacuum by a non-normalizable amount of stuff. And then,
I agree, but you were talking about the singular conformal transformation between the two frames. And that's clearly not a problem for a large class of states which are not conformally invariant, as long as they have finite energy in the Einstein frames.
But if I have such a thing like here,
yeah,
this is a problem, because this thing, when I view it in the, I mean, it's obvious already in the Freeman-Robertson-Walker patch. Because if I have a state which is uniform under time translations along this hyperbola, it will be uniform under spatial translations along this hyperbola. So I have a full non-compact amount of stuff in which I have, for example, energy density. And that's really what makes the crunch.
Yeah, it's to do with the relative information. Right?
What?
It's to do with the relative information. The model induces the relative information. Prevents you from doing that.
Yeah, but from the point of view of the field theory, this is a very mild thing, because I'm not affecting the ultraviolet or anything. It's just an honest state in the conformal field theory. But I am forcing a frame to look at it, which by being singular, looks like a crunch. Okay? Are you?
How are you taking M to infinity and finite time?
Right.
Because,
you will see.
That's
kind of yes, yes. So,
you saying this relevant information is not a constant?
Well, this domain monopole is the boundary, so you have to do
the constant. In Einstein frame.
Einstein.
I have a question on bunch state. I thought that for a massless field, there is no, strictly speaking, bunch state space.
Well, I don't know. I guess there are experts here that can answer that question. But let me define that as whatever is the Hartle-Hawking construction giving me with the Sitter invariance. Okay. I assume that that can be defined. So if the conformal field theory can be defined in the sphere.
For
keeping
massless field, it can't be.
Even
if it's a conformally coupled massless field.
Yeah. Okay. I am assuming a
conformal coupling is an effective finite mass that makes the path interval converge.
Okay, let's see. I'm finishing. So, how can one make a picture of how the crunching state looks?
So you look here at the situation, which was is one of the two cases you considered. Didn't something happen in the other cases?
Well, in the other case, it's a bit the same, except that the picture from the field theory point of view is a little bit less obvious, because
here it's almost like because this thing hits the boundary that you have created your singularity.
Yeah. From the bulk point of view, is the same happening. It's just that the details are different because the concentration, if you like, of breakdown of ADS isometries is here, out here, larger than the scale of the curvature, or is here on a scale which is smaller than the scale of the curvature. So that's...
The rest is the same, you say.
The rest, as far as the bulk story, is the same.
There's still simply something hitting
the only thing you have to make sure is that near the origin, you have a slight deformation of ADS. It can be seen as the effect of a few relevant operators connected in the infrared fixed point, which is the case of the large bubble. Or it can be seen just as a randomization group flow that is stopped by the box from the UV fixed point. It's stopped by the box before it gets any big. It's just still linear. Okay? So if like the theory is still in the confined phase because the box is small, effectively. You still see the ultraviolet degrees of freedom there, just bumping in the box. In the other case, it's the globules, if you like, or the infrared degrees of freedom that are bumping in the box. Now, how can one be a little bit more graphical? So the idea is that in this case here, the state that you generate, let me call psi m, this state is O, 1 comma d invariant, but it is not conformally invariant. So if you propagate it with the Einstein frame Hamiltonian, in general, it will become singular, because the Einstein frame Hamiltonian is related to the Sitter frame Hamiltonian by a singular transformation. The de Sitter frame Hamiltonian does nothing to it because the state is defined to be the Sitter invariant. Right? So this state, if you sit in the Sitter, looks just like the some equilibrium state in which you have, for example, a condensate. Okay? It's not the absolute vacuum, I mean, it's not the standard vacuum of the theory, but it has a condensate of some field. Right? Suppose, for example, that you write the de Sitter Hamiltonian as the CFT de Sitter Hamiltonian plus the relevant perturbation will be some operator of the form M this is D minus delta some operator, okay, where delta is smaller than D, right? Now suppose that this thing has a coupling which makes it acquire an expectation value. So suppose this takes an expectation value, define an effective field for it, and write an effective potential, a 1pi type effective action. Okay? So you write an effective potential for this effective field, and you will have something that will look like this. If this thing acquires an expectation value, it will sit here. Okay. This is the positive mass of a conformal field in the Sitter. Okay. This is the stabilization term. I'm assuming that the theory is stable, so the theory doesn't have nasty things like whatever, you know. I'm assuming that I have a positive term, which is like goes like this for a conformal invariant scalar field. Right? This is the mass with the conformal coupling to the density, to the conformal mass, to the coupling of the Ricci density of the Sitter. And this is induced by this term here, which in this effective potential will look like something which will look like a lambda m b minus lambda phi 2 delta over d minus 2 plus positive branches. Now, in order for this picture to be a good approximation in some sense, I really need to be in the thing wall approximation because I am sort of encapsulating all the physics of this whole chunk of stuff into some single field degree of freedom. So it's like the position of the shell. You have to think of it as a brain, right? And this is the collective coordinate for the size of the brain, for the transverse coordinate for the brain. Okay. In general, this will not be possible, right? So this is you have to think of this as being corrected by a tower of operators, but minimally, you can think of it just to make a picture of what goes on as an effective Landau-Ginzburg model in which everything is conformal except for the effect of having integrated out all the degrees of freedom except this global field that gives me the size of the bubble. And the leading operator that I can write down which has the correct scaling dimension is this one. Right? So now if I look at this, and I put this in the Sitter, I assume that M is much larger than 1 over R, which means in particular the Hubble parameter is very small. So if I am sitting here, I am doing local measurements in the Sitter. The Sitter temperature is not affecting very much this condensate. It's very stable. Okay? It's not making it jump all over the place like that. Okay? This is the problem if I play the game of a very small perturbation, which is deep down, which is very good for the description of the bulk, because it's the kind of simplest possible situation without domain wall or anything like that. From the point of view of making you a picture, an effective picture in field theory, it's more of a problem because you are looking at a state which is the Sitter invariant, is not the vacuum, okay? And its scale is much smaller than the Hubble scale. So locally, if you measure this state, you will just measure the thermal state of the Sitter, And it will be very difficult to see that this is not really deterministic. This is very weakly perturbed. Okay? So it's like the thermal fluctuations will overwhelm everything. Of course, since I am looking at large chain theories, there is this semi-classical degree of freedom that I assume survives the thermal fluctuations, which is what this picture is telling me, that this degree of freedom exists because of large chain. But it's more difficult to realize in field theory in an effective model what is going on in that case. That is why I like to concentrate more in the case where M R is large. So that I can use sort of thin wall approximation type of concepts.
I'm a little puzzled by this whole discussion about this effective potential and having to choose lambda so that O turns on. Isn't this like adding a source to the theory for the operator O? I mean, wouldn't we translate this into modifying the boundary conditions for the dual scalar field?
No, I didn't talk about that because everything I say is completely, if you like, previous to the issue of boundary conditions. I have to choose the right boundary conditions for my scalar fields so that what I am inducing is this operator. Once I have this operator, I am asking this theory to have an expectation value for O. And then I write an effective theory for small fluctuations around that vacuum. And that is, if you like, a Landau-Gisbourne model for the fluctuations that preserve the symmetry of ADS, of the sitter. Just the radial mode of this, just the radial mode of this kind of bubble. If you want to realize now this in detail in the gravity picture, you have to be, I mean, in a particular model, you have to make sure that you are inducing the right relevant operator. You don't want to use, for example, a prescription which instead of turning on the relevant is turning on, say, a marginal relevant, which would make this depend on logs. It can be done, but it's more unwieldy, you know, it becomes less nice in a sense. So in concrete realizations, one has to be careful, but at the end of the day, one wants to generate a state which is the sitter invariant. It has a scale, a mass scale, which is larger than the Hubble scale, is the sitter invariant, and now I'm going to look at this state in the Einstein frame, and the result is that it will crunch. Mm-hmm. And how the crunch looks from this point of view is just writing the conformal transformation of this action. And you get an action for this field theory in Einstein frame, which is just the same action, except that the only mass scale that breaks conformal symmetry in the problem gets time dependent.
Sorry, not to drag this out, but I thought Gary's point, or my question is, when you say you want to generate a state that does this, this is not a state in the original theory. You've changed the dynamics of the Hamiltonian and the sitter space.
No, no, my original theory is a conformal theory perturbed by a relevant operator.
So you've changed the theory, but you've deformed the theory by adding.
Otherwise I have the trivial situation where
I get
the state that I choose in that case is conformally invariant or a normalizable deformation of it, which doesn't do interesting things.
Okay.
I am forcing the system to crunch now.
Yeah.
Why? Because I am defining a state which, when I look at it in the Friedman-Robertson-Wolker frame, has a whole non-compact hyperboloid of energy density. For that, I need this state to be the sitter invariant. If for some reason I stop this state from growing to the boundary, I put a mirror and make it rebound, so I break the sitter invariance. Because the state looks time-dependent now in the sitter frame, then the result will not be a crunch, will be a black hole, a hairy black hole, right? Like you call them. So,
hairy black
hole. I don't know if my English is correct. So, I'm finishing. I'm sorry, I'm taking too much time. So just to finish, tell you that what you get in this picture when you go to Einstein frame is the same thing, except that you replace M by m of t, which is just omega of t m. And this is going to infinity as t goes to t star. Okay? But you see, I arranged things so that this coupling is negative, so it's producing Bose condensation. So what is happening is that this is going down. So I get a time-dependent potential that is doing this. But this minimum is falling to minus infinity in finite time. And therefore, the state is evolving until under a very singular Hamiltonian. And the kinetic energy accumulated in the field goes to infinity. The potential energy goes also to infinity. And it's a crunch. It's a very nasty thing. Okay, but the whole thing is just a complementary dual by a conformal map to a peaceful condensate that is sitting there, withstanding the thermal fluctuations in the sitter for all time. Now, if I want to regularize the crunch and produce the hairy black holes, the only thing I need to do is to kill the culprit. And the culprit is, again, the fact that I am arranging for a whole hyperboloid to have the energy density, which is non-compact. So I have to make the energy density compact in the hyperbolic slicing of Riemann, Robertson, Walker. And for that, I need to sort of kill the eternity of the sitter, of the sitter state. The state cannot be a sitter invariant. So one way of doing that in a sort of a conceptual way is to say that I will look at a situation where the de Sitter symmetry is only is accidental. So the de Sitter symmetry is accidental, which means that it's an infrared symmetry that appears in the infrared of the theory, but the ultraviolet doesn't have the de Sitter symmetry. I will say that the ultraviolet has Einstein symmetry, which is U1 cross OV. That means that you have here your bulk. You define your initial state here. And this theory now has two scales. There is a scale, which I will call lambda, above which the theory doesn't have, my state doesn't have the Sitter symmetry. If you like, my theory doesn't have the Sitter symmetry. Okay? So the metric above this the ultraviolet definition of the theory is strictly made in the Einstein frame. And the ultraviolet definition of the theory is static in the Einstein frame, and the state is close to a vacuum in the Einstein frame. There's no funny that the theory is not primarily defined in the de Sitter frame. It's primarily defined in the Einstein frame. And I specify vacuum conditions here above that scale, so the symmetry is OD cross U1. And then below this scale, I allow to cook up by the normalization group flow a state which has OD, 1 symmetry. So there is another scale in the problem, M. And I have this bubble, which is growing. But this bubble, I am not allowing it to go here because it would break the symmetry. So among the specification of my theory, some potential, some steep potential that it makes sure that whatever bubble is going to the ultraviolet will rebound. Right? There's a wall regularization. Then what happens is that this goes in. There's a pulse of energy that goes in. This produces a singularity of a black hole type. I get a black hole here. Above this asymptota, I get Riemann-Robertson-Walker geometry. Here I get ABS. Here I get ABS, here I get ABS, approximately, and here I get ABS black hole. But the funny thing is that the crunch is not produced, the crunch singularity is not associated to the black hole singularity. It's actually associated to this pulse of energy, which, if I remove the regulator, comes here and produces the original crunch that I had before. So the crunch is produced by the tearing of space by this backflow of energy that comes from the boundary in. Okay. So this is the regularization of the crunch. And you see that it's actually the limit to the part of the metric that looks like Riemann-Robertson-Walker almost ABS. Above this shell, I get the black hole metric, which does have this symmetry. It doesn't have the OT, 1 symmetry. So So that's the regularization. And this is the Hayri black hole. It's Hayri because I have to specify this wall here and material that that is capable of specifying that wall. I need I need a scalar field capable of producing this defect in the vacuum. So I think that's all I wanted to say.
So one of the reasons for applying gauge gravity duality to these, cosmological singularities is we'd like to answer the question, is a singularity resolved by quantum effects? Do you somehow have a big, is it a big bounce? There's another expanding phase. And I mean, it seems to me that the outcome of this analysis is you've got a dual description of the Big Crunch. It's just in terms of a field theory with time-dependent couplings, which explicitly diverge at finite time. So the answer is no, you don't evolve past the crunch. It's not resolved. It's just really the end, according to this, in this model.
That, right.
Do you agree that that's the answer?
Yeah. This is very similar to the black hole story, except that in the black hole, this map to sort of interior bubble variables that see the crunch is done in a subspace of the Hilbert space of finite dimension. Here, the whole Hilbert space goes through the crunch. There's infinite entropy going into the crunch because it's an infinite crunch that hits the boundary. That's why I can specify it by a very cryptic local statement, which is the complementarity map is a conformal transformation, which is specified locally.
I don't think I would say it's like the black hole.
This is because the crunch, and I can see the crunch without conformal transformation because the crunch reaches the boundary. In the black hole, the crunch never reaches the boundary.
Yeah.
So the whole story of complementarity has to be dig out from the infrared end of the Riemannian group flow, and it's not obvious from the local variables in the boundary. How to find the map, okay? But once you find it, it will only give you a Hamiltonian evolution, which is approximate and lasting for finite time. Okay.
I'm not sure. I think Albion's going to contradict that.
Well, I'm confused by something more remote. I mean, what would stop you formally from taking your the global description, and just specifying your Hamiltonian to not stop at that point. Just decide you're going to patch on in the future with some M of T and try and continue the evolution of the field theory.
In a sense, I could, because if I find another operator algebra that I can define as describing for me another history with the same state, if you look at the state that's fixed, this complementarity is just stories told by different operator algebras, which define what are your observables. And the only thing you need is to make sure that in some, for a lot of time, these operator algebras are semi-classical looking. They have the coherence and all that, so that you can talk of classical things. Otherwise, you cannot talk of geometries. No?
Well, I guess you want to know if the field theory description, first of all, is self-contained. Or
so here it's self-contained.
Goes bad with the rapidly time-dependent.
How can it not go bad? It's divergent.
Does the state exist before? Because it exists before in the theory is well defined, you just evolve it.
Right.
I think the state has been ill defined right when you define it.
I don't think this is the property of any particular state. It's
why is it defined?
Because if it's defined at that time before, we had the arguments earlier. If we have a state defined at a certain time, you just evolve the Hamiltonian and it will be defined for all times. And you just
The Hamiltonian is singular.
Terms in the Hamiltonian diverge in finite time. Well,
the funny thing is that there are two operator algebras. One of them is singular, the other is not, but both of them have semi-classical looking pictures, which means that there is an interior space-time that you can call big. And they don't commute in fine-grained terms.
Which algebras are you talking about? So you see that on the Einstein one.
Well, suppose you took the Einstein one and you regulated it by making the mass not quite blow up, but you made it get really large and then you made it get small again.
Yeah, that's this thing.
Yeah.
That's the black hole. Okay. So as soon as you regulate it at all.
In that case, I'm forcing the ultraviolet of the theory to look vacuum-like in Einstein frame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And therefore, my state, it can be doing terrible things, but I know that it will never kill my Einstein frame universe because it's finite energy.
And so that's all you needed. You didn't need those specifications with the lines and all that. You just make the mouse come up and down for that picture.
Yeah, but that would mean that my state to begin with would not be given by this nice Euclidean continuation, which is very symmetric.
What if you stick to the sitter slices and you just do all the sitter space?
Yes.
Go to the future of these slices and then you do all of the sitter space.
I don't know. maybe. Well, it's a state. Well, you have to glue an eternity with a future eternity with a past eternity.
I could glue a million
points. It's a non-compact.
Different states and
you have to glue two non-compact boundaries together. So it's, you have to wait until the end of the first eternity to start the second eternity. I don't know what that means.
Is there a logical spot of field theories for red theory? Then just the theory prepared by an relevant operator with the coefficient that is blowing up, and people look to that. So there's some issue of whether there's some effective dimension which is relevant or not. So there's some critical growth of this coefficient that there would be a singularity or not. Is that the case? Can you think of continuing, kind of eliminating the singularity by pumping out energy from the infrared conformal field theory? So you add some other operator that pumps out energy with just the degree of freedom you have in the infrared. And, well, I don't know if it's.
I don't know, because the problem is that if you look at it in the Einstein frame, it's very difficult to imagine that things you do in the infrared just in the infrared will solve your problem, because your problem is that you are building a state which is becoming out of control in the ultraviolet.
Right, but the complete problem with the puzzle is that you have a relevant operator. So you would think it just decouples from the infrared. It doesn't decouple here because the coefficient becomes a result. The effective infrared operator has some effective dimension. But you could still think that you're just pumping out energy at some arbitrary rate from the infrared.
Well, if you look at it from the infrared, the funny features of the state, the offending features of the state, are seen as these irrelevant operators having a coupling that is blowing up. So if you stay at finite energy in a Einstein slicing, it looks like you are out of trouble because the cutoff of the theory is going up. The infrared operator is even becoming with time even more weak. So you think, what is going to happen to me? The problem is that this is still an effective theory, and you don't know what is happening at that scale. And when the cutoff hits infinity in finite time for you, something could be happening there that pays you back later and comes back. And this is what is happening in this picture. See? If you don't have a complete description of the theory at all scales, you don't really know what happens at T star from the point of view of the Einstein frame. So you integrate out this part, you don't know what happens. Maybe the theory just dies smoothly, or maybe the theory hits you back with this backflow of energy from the ultraviolet. It's going down. Part of your state is doing interesting things in the region you integrated out, and therefore you don't know what is going on.
I have the full theory, lambda still goes to infinity, but I have some other operator that pumps energy from the infrared field.
It's a very general question. Maybe it's related to what Gary asked. What is the main point of this? Is the idea to say how would you describe a big crunch in a conformal theory field theory language? Is that the essential?
Okay, the bottom line is, if you give me a conformal field theory, the form with a relevant operator, and you put it in a sphere, I have enough data to reconstruct for you a crunching history. That is the enough data to reconstruct holographically a crunch. That's the point.
I'd like to give a slightly different answer. For me, one of the main open problems in quantum gravity is to understand the Big Bang singularity. Right. Big hole, black hole times the singularity is awesome. Okay. We want to understand physics near the Big Bang. Okay. We need a non-perturbative quantum theory of gravity to do that. Okay. ABS-CFT gives us one framework for a non-perturbative description of quantum gravity in terms of the dual field theory. So it's natural to ask, given this particular example, what does it predict for physics near a cosmological singularity? And it seems like if you can map the problem of a non-perturbative quantum gravity to a problem in ordinary field theory, you've made a big advance. Okay. So that's the motivation for looking at models like this. Unfortunately, well, maybe it's fortunately, the answer turns out to be very simple. Because in this framework, whenever you try to model a cosmological singularity, where the singularity goes all the way out to the boundary, what you find is that something terrible is happening to your dual field theory, like these, you know, relevant couplings diverge in finite time. So I think we're learning an important lesson. At least in this context of asymptotically ADS spacetimes, the big crunch is not resolved, and you just really, the dual description goes bad at the time that the singularity hits the boundary.
But in this case, you at least have the choice of looking at things with the other operator algebra in which nothing happens.
Well, no, it doesn't. I think that's wrong.
In the De Sitter frame, that's not.
In the De Sitter frame, nothing happens, but your De Sitter time is not going past where the big crunch hits. Yeah. Yes, it's infinite.
But it contains all the information to go past.
No, I don't think I agree.
Yeah,
with
you just.
No, you need to map the operator.
You need to on the boundary. You need all the time to cross from one side to the other side in order to define your whole step. Otherwise, you cannot consume.
No, the only reason why I cannot go inside here is because I chose a renormalization group flow, which is the Sitter invariant.
The general statement about ADS-CFT is that in order to define this state, you need enough data on the boundary to be able to cross from one side to the other side. Otherwise, you cannot construct just from the boundary the entire state. You have to be able to put the entire, so the reconstruction of the state of your full theory.
No. No, but that's for local measurements, Nicola. I'm specifying the theory in a, as a super observer, I'm giving you a wave function all over the sphere and just evolving it with Hamiltonian. I'm not playing the game of quantum De Sitter space with gravity. No. This De Sitter has no gravity.
You mean you're not in a common patch of your De Sitter slices?
Right? I can be if I want, but it's trivial. It's like in Rindler space. There is no stress like that. There is no gravity in the CFT.
Can I following up on Gary's question? Is the conformal field theory that's meant to describe the big crunch one with a time-dependent, an explicitly time-dependent Hamiltonian?
Yes.
That seems like it's outside of the spirit of the original ABS-CFT. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like you could do almost anything if you allow the time Hamiltonian to be time-dependent.
Well, so there's another way of doing this, which is what Thomas Hertog and I first looked at. You can get the big crunch in the bulk with the time-independent Hamiltonian. The problem is that you have to add basically an unbounded potential to your Hamiltonian. So the field essentially rolls off to infinity and finite time. Okay, so the Hamiltonian becomes static, but the theory itself is sick. So we didn't know how to make sense of that. This is a new approach, new way of thinking about it, which I think is nicer in a way, because it makes it very clear what the problem is and how you can do it so simply by adding a small relevant perturbation in the Sitter space. Very nice description. But it doesn't change the conclusion in the sense that I don't see how you can use this to go beyond the singularity.
Well, my view is that the crunch is just a story told by some operator algebra. And there are various operator algebras and complementarity is the statement that you can.
Now, this is saying that if you're in the bulk and you have a sufficiently powerful rocket ship, you can avoid the crunch by going off to infinity before the crunch hits you. That's not a very satisfying way
that, to avoid that thing you are saying is not a statement about the operator algebra. It's a statement about the state you are looking at.
But Gary, you can't do this problem. You get to infinity and you wait around there for a while and the crunch still hits you.
You can't escape it
in this problem. And that's the initial point. It's not clear what you would. Maybe you should say in these models you say the crunch is not resolved. Yeah. I mean, it's a singularity.
Well, you need expert previous.
You can fix it by hand. Yeah. You're fixing it by hand.
Well, you need expert.
To link it to the extended the ABS-CFT story. So if you get ABS-CFT by taking some near horizon limit of D3 brains, then it's important that there is a decoupling. Maybe at the physics within the ABS throw decouples from the asymptotic Minkowski region, which you can therefore factor out. But the lesson I take away from this, or one lesson, is that if you modify the boundary conditions away from the standard supersymmetric ABS boundary conditions, you induce potential that make these brains, or the brain walls in this case, reach infinity in finite time, which seems to be clear violation of the decoupling of the ABS space from what used to be this asymptotic Minkowski space that we chose to ignore because it was decoupled. So it does seem that there's probably not enough degrees of freedom contained in the CFT to describe what happens to this state when you get a crunch here. Now, whether that means whether it cannot be resolved in some bigger framework than this is, I guess, unclear to me at least. But it does seem that we don't have enough degree of freedom here to deal with it.
So are you guys who are coming to strong conclusions saying that the field theory living on the sitter with this hard time independent mass doesn't make sense, or just that it doesn't have enough in it to contain the RW region?
The second,
yeah, okay. So the field theory that's written up there has, is fine.
Oh, it's fine as far as it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, it's a complete field theory. It's a complete system. There's nothing missing from that system. It's unitary.
This is only the sitter slice.
Yeah, just field theory on the sitter.
No, but I think
quantum field
theory generally don't like to put on a sitter slice because it can be extended beyond it.
Wait.
I'm asking a question about it.
I'm just saying, forget about it. Yes, it just conformal field theory, quantum field theory on the sitter. Do you think that's are you saying that's not a well-defined system?
I think your two-dimensional conformal field theory and put it on a slice that we find the sitter space. It's like doing the Wall Street of the string and then stopping it somewhere.
Yeah.
So you're saying that even though the sitter space is geodesically complete, it's not
for a conformal field theory
under conformal, not be some larger conformal transformation.
This is no longer a formal field theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
No. I don't
get part on the framework of effective field theory.
This is a CFT with a relative coupling turned on.
You see, the theory that cannot be continued is the theory transformed to the Einstein frame.
Sorry, can I go back to Hermann's?
And that is only true for certain things.
So, sorry, I'm just being really slow. But in the UV, the field theory doesn't know it's in the sitter anyway. So I would have thought it was well defined. In the IR, it feels that it's in the sitter, and one can compute correlation functions. Yeah. So it's. Are you agreeing that the field theory just on the sitter is well defined, or are you?
Depending on what questions you'd like to ask, because I really think that the issue of the issue we're discussing now is one that goes beyond, just the quantum field theory calculation.
That's fine, but that's a different statement. So.
Well, but I think quantum field theory generally, when you find it with away from quantum field theory principles, needs an effective field theory description. And as such, I think we can do our usual things.
Yeah, we do our usual thing,
but
it's living on a sphere.
So are you saying the theory that they would like to use to analyze the singularity issue is not an entirely consistent theory, or not necessarily an entirely consistent theory, and therefore it doesn't give necessarily a clear answer to the question?
That's exactly what I think, that if you start using quantum field theory away from quantum field theory, then you should use it as an effective field theory, and it doesn't.
No, but that's not the problem, because this is a relevant perturbation. The ultraviolet is safe. I'm not doing anything really drastic here.
And that's a surprise, right? Because you don't think you're doing anything drastic, but you create this monster which goes all the way out to the UV.
Because I choose a set of operators to tell the story which is singular, and therefore the answer is just a singular story.
In the CFT, in the sitter space, you don't know anything about the singularity.
Right.
So I think
no, you don't know anything.
I don't know.
It's all in the.
Don't you think there could be?
Think in terms of.
You have to choose a singular set of observables in the
sitter
theory.
Think in terms of Heisenberg, not of Schrödinger.
Yeah.
is the operators that the
operator algebra is single. Now you're trying to do both. Live both in the city space and take the global view from which you get to use the singularity. But I agree with you when you showed us that from the city space you can only go into that conclusion. And then you don't see the singularity.
Only?
So
you no.
Or you stay away from it.
First of all, if you stay on the boundary, meaning that you restrict yourself to just very ultraviolet observations, you don't see the crunch because the crunch is infinitely far away from you.
Yes.
It comes at the end of your lifetime, which is infinite.
I would say
if you want to get it in the infrared description of the theory, you could, because you come down here, and there is a possibility of getting inside here, right? But for that, you need to apply a Ramelation group flow, which is not the sitter invariant. So from the point of view of the definition of the theory in the sitter space, you are slicing out energy with a cutoff, which doesn't respect the symmetries of your state. It's very weird from the point of view of the field theory operational rules. So the easy way of doing that is to go to the Einstein frame, in which your theory is time dependent. But in the Einstein frame, you slice the geometry with energies with respect to the cutoff is homogeneous on the sphere, which is geometrically natural. And then the story is that
you
get the crunch.
I think what will happen is if I just stick in the center frame, most of the standard observables use local operators, correlation functions, local operators, and finite time. As long as they're finite time, you're going to get this, going to actually get the same answer either way, and you won't go into, as long as they're nice scaling operators, won't go inside. You need to pick some funny operators, which some very bizarre operators. If you want to work in the sitter space, there will be bizarre operators which go through this diagonal line, sort of like a horizon-like thing, and get into the singularity. They're horribly not simple, incredibly ugly. They might look sort of simple in the Einstein frame, and that's the lesson that we've been worried about. The sitter frame will just be kind of ugly. That's the.
It's good old complementarity, the one in the books.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. If there's no more urgent comments, maybe we should move on, Elmi.
Sure. Do you want me to talk now?
Some of us have a faculty meeting at 3:30. Right.
This is much more important than a faculty.
Actually, we can tell what's going on inside the faculty meeting.
maybe another proposal. I actually would like to say a little bit about the issue about go beyond the horizon in some other discussion later this week. So if we want to move, have some other continuation of this discussion,
that'd be great.
Then we do some
check up the schedule.
Has that been scheduled yet?
No, not yet. I talked to one about.
Okay, but we can do that together.
If we then do something together. That we have spoken the week where we do those.
Great.
Does it sound good?
Sounds good. I mean, with any two talks, the second one's going to get squeezed a little less. As long as Eric eventually gets to talk. Whatever that is.
These are discussions more than talks, though, right?
That's going to be a discussion.
Okay, so let's just form it now.
Yes.
Okay.
I want to be